Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
True Hauntings is a Frightfully Good production.
Down a small, sleepy lane and not far from Upper Dicker, Arlington Reservoir and Hailsham is stunning Mickleham Priory. This is a 13th century priory that stands on a private island.
This priory is the site of deaths, murders and destruction, and was looted for its ornaments and valuables at the time of King Henry VIII. Although it has seen many different eras and has had many different purposes, one thing is for sure. The ghosts of the past still remain and are as active as ever. Hi, I'm Renata.
And I'm Anne. And in this week's episode of the True Hauntings podcast, we explore the many ghostly sightings and experiences that still haunt the Priory. The now famous English ghost hunting show, Most Haunted, concluded their first series with an investigation of the Mickleham Priory on the 17th of September 2002, which was coincidentally the first episode to be produced. In the 8th series, the team revisited this location to mark the 100th episode.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow, forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
My grandfather said to watch out for the dragon in case he nabbed me, but I, being six, was more concerned with the moat. The dragon was a dusty yellow clacking monster dancing along with a Morris troupe of red-faced labouring men. The moat, though, was placid, wide and dark, green and still. Certainly there were cheerful ducks in pairs with half-grown ducklings, as well as coots and shyer moorhens, but they all seemed to paddle hastily across the water just to get where they were going and nothing more. My grandfather held my hand tightly as we went under the medieval gatehouse over the bridge. Inside the main house, it was both stared and Gothic arched in stone, and all the furniture smelled like bees' waxed effort. When I leaned on the panelling after the long climb, I tried not to leave telltale tiny fingerprints. The muted tapestries relieved the lime-white walls, and in the prior's chambers, we came across a chair for a dragon. My grandfather sat in it, though I'm not sure he should. Maybe the staff were kind to him because he had a stick. The leaflet about the priory, smelling of fresh print and glossy like the polished wood, told us long, long lists of facts, but it was the friendly docent who mentioned the ghost. There were at least three, he said, including a grey lady in the gatehouse, a blue lady in the music room, and a wandering monk in the Tudor wing. Some of them had drowned, he nodded with a little glee. The dragon in the grounds was a nucker, he said. It had come from a water hole and now lived in the priory moat amongst the sodden ghosts, for better or for worse. I shuddered at the thought of silvered weeds and long fingers under the water's skin dragging me down. I trembled at the idea of voices in my ears roaring at me to stay, so that the song of daylight and air and the earth grew more distant. Maybe the ghosts were sirens, like the ones from far away that we'd been told about at school, and they were lonely in their wearied haunts and hoping for company. My grandfather said the gatehouse was a fine building, and I wondered if it wouldn't be so bad to be entangled there. It was so very green and wet and grey. Later, blinking in the bright of the August sun, we each ate a vanilla cornet sold from an old-fashioned icebox. Already tired out, we sprawled across an unrolled tartan blanket on a bank of the short mowed grass. Breathing a sigh of relief, we drank from the flask of tea my grandfather had bought in his canvas rucksack. The cup had a comforting, warm plastic smell, and the flask was rich with tannin. Across from us, on the close-cropped lawn, the Morris men danced on. The nucker snapped at another child, snap, snap, and I knew I would cry if he came near me. Stalls and displays, bright jewels round the grounds. My father called it a bank holiday jolly. In my thoughtful small child way, I considered the general levity and remembered the Augustinian monks, which the docent had told us had traipsed across this lawn. I imagined them to be tonsured like the grass and martyred. We were good Catholics at home, though my grandfather was fiercely not. He said they'd been truculent and obdurate, and good King Henry had sacked the monasteries for a reason. This was not the history I'd been taught, but sitting in the sunshine with a cheese and tomato sandwich cut diagonally on soft white bread, anything seemed possible. So I nodded to agree. We looked at the stalls, bedecked with bunting and cheerful cloths, and watched a blacksmith at a hasty forge. He was a bit too much like the nucker with his yellow apron and clacking grin. I was scared. Even though he gave me a square head nail he had made. Tap, tap. My grandfather brought me a small decorated cross on a leather thong. Perhaps he was not as fierce as I had once thought, but he kept me away from the snapping nucker. Both things a reward, I suppose, for being a good girl, mostly, and one who tried not to fuss. The gardens were resplendent and quiet, away from gaggling throngs of costumed peoples. Each of the outdoor rooms was paved and gravelled and edged in summer beauty. A woman took a cutting with a pair of silver scissors. She looked around guiltily and carefully didn't catch my eye. She made her way up a path, the little scissors flashing in the sun. Snip, snip. Furtive glances were worse than anything for calling attention to yourself. I knew all the things that could give you away. No one stopped her, though, and when she left the garden, she was smiling and patting her bulging pockets. My grandfather pursed his lips and said that some folks were simply rude. When we got back to the bus stop, we were both worn out. My grandfather from all his protestations, and I from the difficulty of being six in a time-mellowed house and sumptuous grounds you have not yet grown into. Neither of us told my mother I fell in the moat.
Welcome to the studio, Anne.
Oh, why, thank you, Auntie Nata. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
That's good.
And I hope all of our listeners are doing well, and you're into the new year now, so I hope that you have reset your minds for fun and wonderful things to happen to you this year, 2024. I wonder what it's going to turn out like, Anne.
Well, we're going to Ireland. That's all I know.
Ireland and Salem.
And Salem and New England.
Yes.
Anyway, we don't want to bang on about that again. We've banged on about that before. So if you want to know more, just look up Mysterious Adventures. Simple as that.
For this one, we've gone back to England to a place that is steeped with history, Mickleham Priory. And we're going to take you for a walk.
Are you yawning already?
I always do this sit down to these freaking microphones. I think it must be
it's the shape of them. You're just opening your mouth ready, are you?
No.
Oh, no.
No. I think it's a nervous tic, actually. It's a nervous tic.
We're going to make note of that, people. So let's see if she does it every single episode or whether we're just keeping her awake, because you yawn and that makes me yawn, which makes all of our people who are listening yawn as well. Apologies.
Okay. Well, let's get on with this so we stop yawning. So as I mentioned before, we are heading today to investigate Mickleham Cemetery. A priory.
You can do the cemetery too if you want to.
And it's believed that the name Mickleham means something like a big piece of land surrounded by a river on three sides. Isn't that romantic? Now, back in the day, they cleared the island of its forest and maybe they used it as a farm for a while. Now, on the other side of the river, there was the huge forest of dicker.
Oh, what did they grow in the forest of dicker?
I have no idea.
Oh, I can imagine there'd be a few plants of...
Maybe they didn't.
Bet those sacred shrubs.
Maybe.
Sacred bush.
Now, the Mickleham site was cleared in the Saxon period and it was granted to Norman de Anglais. Oh, God, I've written it down somewhere. L'Aigle.
Oh, that sounds like some sort of dish from the 70s. L'Aigle.
And they were a family who settled after the conquest of England. One of the family members, Richard, commonly known as Dick, employed a young man named Thomas.
Is that the one that Mary loved?
Beckett. Don't stop me here. Okay. He employed a young man called Thomas Beckett. Well, you should know that name.
Oh, Thomas R. Beckett.
Yes. So during a hunting expedition later in 1140-ish, Thomas's horse slipped on an icy bridge because they used to go out hunting together and he fell into the river. Now, he was swept down towards a nearby mill and it was only by good fortune that the miller was there at the time, and at that very moment he actually turned off the mill wheel, saving Beckett's life. Now, unable to pull the young man to safety, the only thing that could stop him from being crushed was the fact that he stopped the mill wheel. And then they sort of jumped in, grabbed Beckett, and from that moment, Thomas thought that he had been granted this gift of life by God, and he decided to join the church and devote his life to his Saviour.
Mm-hmm.
The rest, they say, is history. So tradition says that this dramatic rescue took place at Mickleham, where there has been a mill since at least the 13th century and very likely probably even before that date.
Because they went hunting in the 1100s, didn't they? So the mill was there then, so that had to be there in the 12th century.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In 1229, Gilbert de
cough it up.
That's it. Founded an Augustinian priory at Mickleham, but he didn't stay in England long enough to see it develop because he lost favour with the king at the time, Henry III, and he was banished to France. So the kings at that time had a lot of say in what was going on in the country, as opposed to kind of like now where they're really just a figurehead more than anything else.
Yeah.
Now, the priory received grants from other benefactors and was served by four canons under a prior.
So that's not boom, boom cannons.
No, yes. Yeah, that confused me when I read it. I've gone, what's going on? By 1283, the priory was well enough established to host a visit by the Archbishop of Canterbury, and that would have been a huge, huge thing.
That's what she said.
And the priory also suffered during the Black Death and in 1353, it was fined for not having enough cannons to fulfil its obligations. Yes,
I have to admit, time you say cannon, I'm thinking boom, boom.
Yeah, priests.
Yeah.
For the souls of Gilbert de Aquilia, his ancestors and the heirs forever. Whatever that means.
Forever and ever. Our woman.
Okay, I'm going further down in my notes.
Really?
Here.
Is it exciting or do I have to feel? No.
Right, so the name, I'm going to go back to the name. The name
Le, we want to hear it again.
L'Aigle originally came from Normandy, and they got the name from a legend about an eagle's nest because that name actually means eagle, for goodness sake. So
you love your history, don't you?
Especially when I can't say it.
We did a live you doing the Newcastle history at the Convict Lumberyard the other day, and your history is amazing. When you love it, you really make it entertaining. It doesn't have to be as dry as a nun's. Woohoo!
Right. Now, one outstanding prior was John Leem. There were a couple during the lifetime of this monastery or priory, and he took over at around 1374. So this is past the Black Death, which was in 1353. Mickleham lost a bunch of their cannons there. They didn't.
Boom boom.
They didn't know how they could maintain
the
upkeep of the priory and to pay their fines. So along comes John Leem. He was the one that dug a moat and built a gatehouse to improve Mickleham's defences during a time when the French were raiding around the Sussex area.
I'm going to hit you with my baguette.
We are coming in and we are taking over and we are going to bake bread.
I think you'd throw a croissant as a boomerang.
So he took over from around 1374 and he remained there until his death in 1417. His duties varied from the most important duties that you would have had in the priory to less critical ones, which my interpretation is he was a nosy bastard and wanted to know everything.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, what else did they have to do apart from clean the lavatorium? Check out our episode on the dark side of Wally. Now, someone said it was Wally Priory.
Oh, Wally.
Wally. No, we were calling it Whaley. It's Wally.
Okay. Now, after Prior Leem passed away, there was another strong character, William London, and he took over in 1423. He wrote a pretty long letter about the new abbot of St. Augustine's in Canterbury, and he was against that person. So you can expect that there would be trouble, yes. He really didn't like the new abbot, and apparently the letter ended up causing so much trouble that it got buried, so to speak, and no one talked about it.
You don't mean dug a hole and buried, or just put it out of the way?
Put it out of the way and thought this guy is a troublemaker. So things got even messier in 1437 when Mickleham's seal and the keys of the prior, sub-prior and granger went missing and ended up in Sir Roger Finnis of Hurstmonceux's back pocket. So what's going on here is that everyone is coming in and raiding the place very, very quietly, and they're taking away all of the things that are worth something. So the
very
priors,
human, isn't it?
The priors are kind of turning a blind eye and going, for what favours?
What do I get out of it?
Yeah, what favours and what can I have if I give you this gold cross or, you know, whatever it might be? Now, Sir Roger Finnis kicked out the prior and took all the priory stuff. Commissioners were called in to sort things out, and they eventually got everything back, but they weren't too pleased with the condition of the stuff.
They'd been knocked around a bit.
Knocked around a bit. So the next prior was Lawrence Winchelsey, and he took over in 1438. By that stage, the priory was very, very neglected, and the canons were misbehaving.
Oh, misbehaving canons.
So the authorities stepped in, and in 1441, there was a visitation at Mickleham Priory, and they weren't too pleased with what was going on.
Well, not pleased.
Apparently, Prior Winchelsey had stolen and sold a ton of stuff that belonged to the priory.
Again?
And this means not your normal bits and pieces. They were all gone by that stage.
The bits and bobs, yes.
He was selling off timber, millstones, even a silver goblet. Oh, my God. He also sold off 38 oxen, 6 cows, 12 horses, and valuable books.
What was he doing with the money?
I don't know.
Wine, women and song, no doubt.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what else it could have been because I might get in trouble.
Now, there's more. It seems he was paying protection money to Sir Roger Finnis, and he even donated fancy clothes to some folk in London just to shut them up.
Oh, donate, is that in air inverted commas?
Yeah, yeah.
And donate or bribes?
He stashed away the priory's documents in a secret hiding spot. Oh, I wonder whether they've been found.
Oh, ooh. I think I may have something on that. I've just clicked. Oh, right, okay, keep going.
Plus, he held all the important positions in the house and didn't pay the canons their fees. So they were
That's why the canons were misbehaving.
Yeah, so they basically were struggling to put food and drink on the table while he was having a great time. In 1478, things weren't looking good. The priory's buildings were falling apart. They even had to sell off the priory's jewels during a lawsuit with Bayham Abbey to cover their expenses. So this also caused some scandal with the sub-prior John West. What's a John West tag?
Oh, John West is the best or something?
Yeah, it's an Australian
thing. I don't know.
Thing.
I smell something fishy there. they can fish.
Mm-hmm. So there was a scandal with the sub-prior, John West, and a lady named Alice Ford, who was the wife of a priory servant. She was visiting the prior and canons and getting food and clothing for them from the monastery, which was apparently not too cool. So John West had to fast on bread and water every Friday until his replacement showed up. The rest of the canons were told to stop wandering out, keep quiet, and stay away from the tavern outside the gatehouse. Stay away from the grog. Now, in 1482, John West was elected as a prior by his peers and stayed in the position until his death in 1509. Alice Ford seemed to have some strong ties to the priory because it's her ghost that still is one of the ghosts at the priory.
And what was her name again?
Alice.
Very interesting. I'm just going to make a note on my bit of paper over here.
Alice Ford, maybe, possibly.
Keep going.
The last prior was Thomas Holbeam, and he had a bunch of fellow canons with him. Holbeam was a local guy and possibly related to John Holbeam, who was causing some trouble with his strange and evil arguments back in 1478.
Did you say strange and evil?
Yeah.
I would have loved to have heard those. Yeah,
against the Archbishop.
He was speaking out.
Of Canterbury.
Oh, so of course they had to be evil. Right, yes. Okay.
Now in 1521, when the priory was revisited,
Don't worry, guys, only 500 years to go.
Yeah, even more irregularities. Holbeam also sold off a bunch of stuff and things were absolutely...
They've sold the pews in the church.
There were also some disputes between him and Sir William Pelham over some land in the Dicker.
That's my Dicker, not yours.
This is where the story takes a big turn.
Hold on your knickers, everyone. We're going deeper.
In 1537, under Henry VIII's rule, Mickleham Priory was dissolved. The estate went to Thomas Cromwell, the king's minister, and was described as in good estate. Now, they sold off. You would think that there'd be nothing left of this place, but they sold off the church's ornaments, pictures and other stuff.
They're all men of God, aren't they?
And Henry VIII's team assessed Mickleham's worth to be 171 pounds and some bits and pieces. Now, after the
shekels.
After the deductions, it came down to 160 pounds, and the canons and servants received pensions, and the prior got a big pension of 20 pounds a year for his food and needs. Now, Cromwell was executed in 1540, and Mickleham estate went back to the crown. Part of it was granted to Anne of Cleves, Henry's fourth wife. When she died in 1557, her lands returned to the crown. The new owner was John Foote, who was related to Canon Gregory Foote, who had been a tenant in 1542, and Foote, along with his wife and a London draper, John Roberts, bought the estate from the Crown in 1556. But it didn't stop there. In 1587, John Morley took over, and then in 1580, and then a little bit later.
We're not going to go every month of every year and...
But what I'm trying to show here is the convoluted history of this place and how many people stole, took things, and it passed from one hand to another.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a holy place where people are praying and devoting their lives to God, and it just sounds like the den of iniquity.
Mm-hmm.
What, is there a curse on the land or something?
Well,
there must be a Native American burial ground.
There must be. So Pelham extended the old priory. He sold it for £4,700.
Oh, it's gone up in price.
Yep, and set up some money to support himself and family. The new owner in 1601 was none other than Thomas Sackville, who was related to Queen Elizabeth. They held on to Mickleham for almost 300 years. And then in 1791, a man named William Child, who was a farmer, came to Mickleham and took charge of its farm and 800 acres. 800 acres. They had a bunch of kids, and the last five were born at Mickleham. William was quite a shooter, and there was a tragic incident on the property in 1798 when one of the shepherds who was working with Mr. Child got drowned in the moat while attempting to cross it.
Oh, now hang on. Somebody drowned in the moat, mm-hmm. but the shepherd, that sounds like an adult or a young adult.
Now, remember, no one could swim back then, so it was a bet. It was a bet.
Oh, right, okay. No, I've just got a story in my stories, which is about the moat, and it, yeah, okay, keep going.
Yeah, there's another one. Mr. Child's five-year-old son was playing in the water mill, and his clothing got caught in the machinery, and he was strangled there.
Oh, no.
And died. Now, he also had a 28-year-old son, Thomas. When William passed away, his 28-year-old son Thomas took over. In 1882, Mickleham had 23 rooms, most in use, most furnished. They even had special rooms for brewing beer and cider.
Oh, nice.
Plus a little spot called Isaac's Hole.
Oh!
That had jars of preserves and plenty of wine bottles. Now, Thomas married Elizabeth Stace in 1823. They had 10 children. And their son Francis created a book about Mickleham. In 1852, there were heavy floods. Mr. Child lost a lot of cattle manure.
He lost a lot of poop.
Yeah, and a lot of the cattle drowned from the flood. He died in 1852. His son Francis
took
over.
Hang on a second. Hang on. Wake up, everyone. Wake up.
Times were tough, and Thomas's oldest son eventually emigrated to New Zealand in 1853.
Oh, hello.
In 1861, Elizabeth Child was the owner. In 1871, Thomas Brown was listed as a farmer. In 1896, Lionel Sackville West.
Can I please
in
have
December
a cup of coffee?
In December 1936, a disastrous event struck the priory when a fire broke out on the 19th of December at 4:30 a.m. They did manage
Somebody
to
left their
alert
candle on.
The fire brigade, but they...
Wake up, Renata. Wake up. Finish the sentence.
They The fire brigade arrived at 5:15 a.m. The only water that they could access was from the pond, but the pond was frozen over, so they could not get into it.
Oh, no. Because December, that's like we're into winter there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, here we're boiling.
It became a
haunted priory. Yeah?
Oh, God. It hosted military units. So 1941, you had the 5th Canadian Infantry Brigade that was stationed there. British troops, 165th Infantry Brigade took over. Canadians returned. Bloody, bloody, bloody. It was for... It just went on and
on. It goes on and on and on. There's so many layers.
They had the Home Guard there for a while, the Auxiliary Territorial Services.
The Girl Guides and the Brownies. Little Joey from down the corner.
In 1951, the estate became the home of Frederick and Joyce Story.
Frederick and Joyce, hello. Thank you for joining us. Was that Dory, did you say?
Story.
Oh, Story.
Story. And then it was purchased in 1959 by Mrs. Ruth Honor Hot Black, known as Stella.
Stella Hot Black. Oh, Stella. Bet she makes a good cup of coffee.
Stella Hot Black put in a restaurant and parking areas and...
Please make this end soon. Look how we'll lose our audience. I know you told me the history was a bit dry. It was good there for a while.
I told you.
I liked all the naughty cannons and the people selling stuff off. That was a bit of fun.
Anyway, in 1964.
Oh, God, we're still going.
The Friends of Mickleham Priory were established and, they kind of took over and are looking after the place.
Yep. Did he? Are you done?
Jesus Christ.
No, he's not going to come help us.
That is probably the longest and most convoluted history. And like I said, I have... If I didn't say all of that, I'd have nothing to say.
Yeah, but, I mean, some of it is actually really interesting, but it does show how much has gone on there.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Every couple of years, they'd throw it to the wolves and someone would buy it and take it over. And,
they'd steal a bit more.
Steal a bit more.
Still a bit more.
God.
Oh. No wonder there's some ghosts.
Yeah. Okay.
Are we over to my turn?
Oh, please, yes.
All right. Well, after that riveting history, where do I even start, Renata? Yes, we did have to pause there and just take a breath.
I'm not doing a priory again unless there's a black monk and an American Indian burial ground. I'm just not doing it. That was as boring as poop. But anyway.
No, but it wasn't. It was okay. I'm just going to read this as the opening for my segment. It is said to be haunted by a veritable host of the restless dead.
Oh, well, there you go. I know where they've all come from.
I know. According to Rupert Matthews' book, Ghost Hunter Walks in Sussex, Mickleham Priory's ghosts include a grey lady, a man and a woman in Tudor clothing, a young girl in a ragged dress, and an angry man who, it is said, has tried to force previous ghost hunters out of the building by scaring them witless. So, yes, that was, I can't even see where I got that from, but I wanted to tell you where I got my soundscape, and I actually had two soundscapes. Renata had sent one over, but I found this one and I just thought it was so cute, and it's called The Dragon of Mickleham Priory by E.E. Rhodes, and I think it was just their recollection of their childhood and going there, and I like that they mentioned the ghosts and the the dragon, and at the very end they fill in the moat. I just thought that was a crack. There are many mentions of ghosts. I'm going to give you a little bit of a rundown of the typical ones, and there may be some contradictions, as there often are. So there is the ghost of Thomas Sackville. Now, I remember you mentioned Thomas Sackville.
Yes.
Right. Once owner of the priory, still haunts the halls, and apparently he likes to torment a spirit of a little girl called Rosie. And she is reported to hide in the wood panelling at the top of the stairs to stay clear of her tormentor. Now, there is also a grey lady. Now, the grey lady is seen by the bridge and near the gatehouse. Most of the time she's near the moat staring into the water, apparently mourning her child who drowned there many years beforehand. Now, is that the five-year-old child that you mentioned?
Yes.
Yeah, she's also been seen staring into the faces of sleeping guests and then floats away through the walls.
Oh, nice.
Now, there is a mention of a black hooded monk. There you go. We got you a monk.
Excellent.
In the Undercroft. Oh. Now, we know what the Undercroft is, don't we?
Yes.
Because we went to one at Dudley Castle.
Yes.
And we lay in the stone coffins.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tried to. I didn't quite fit. I had to lie on my side because my ass was too big.
Yeah, mine was a tight fit too.
So, yeah, this is where the monks, I think, are buried or were buried in the Undercroft. And you know how we always talk about there's always famous ghosts and well-named ghosts? Well, apparently there is also a young boy in the kitchen. Just a boy in the kitchen. A maid in the hall. Doesn't that make you feel better?
Yeah.
And a lady dressed in Tudor clothing walking the corridors. There's been reports of poltergeist activity with windows opening, doors banging, shutting, and opening up on their own. And, of course, most haunted.
Yes. Yes. This was their first show that they actually produced.
I'm going to just give you a little bit more information because we're going to concentrate a little bit on Most Haunted.
Okay.
There's also mysterious footsteps in empty rooms, shadowy figures that disappear through walls, whispery voices. They did interview some of the people that were managers at Mickleham Priory. There was somebody called Lindsay Lawrence who said, "One time I was in the end room cleaning when I suddenly heard this noise behind me. I turned around and the only thing and I could see..." And I'm reading that it is. "I turned around and the only thing and I could see..." I think it meant to be "I could see." Mm. "The strange heat haze of a really tall man for about 30 seconds.
Mm.
That's a long time.
It's a long time, yes.
And Lindsay also described a spooky experience that she witnessed during a goat. We got the goat hunts out again. Oh, just make sure I get that second word right. "We were using the Frank's box," she said, and it's a radio device which spirits are, you know, supposed to be able to speak through and all of that. Mm-hmm. "And they heard the word help about 4 or 5 times."
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people that were doing the investigation said, of course, who do you want to help?
Mm-hmm.
And a really high-pitched voice said, "Helen," who was the manager there at the time.
Oh.
They then asked the spirit who wanted to help Helen. And then really slowly it said Lindsay's name.
Mm.
So they don't actually say whether that came to pass or Helen or Lindsay needed help, but... interesting. It's really weird when you hear your own name called out in those things. And we do, well, I do something. When I hear the spirit box and I hear the word help, I'll always say, "Always happy to help. You just need to tell me your name so I can help you."
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you don't get a name. And I had somebody explain it once in one of the books we've read that sometimes it's just an echo from the past. It's a residual thing. Mm-hmm.
You can't help them anyway.
Yeah. Because there's no intelligence behind it. It's just that echo, like the recording being played again.
Yeah.
Now I've lost my spot. There's also the Augustinian monks apparently walking down invisible staircase that was removed centuries ago.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Can you
see?
Imagine that?
Mm-hmm.
That would be very, very cool. So a lot of those stories came from sussexlive.co.uk. Now, this next one here comes from Spooky Isles. We love Spooky Isles. So this is talking about Michaela, and apparently they're sort of going around some haunted locations. They're saying that this one tends to be very, very haunted. The guide takes Michaela around and tells the ghost stories. Now, they say there's a little girl between the age of 6 and 10. And then the guide believes the child had a very unhappy childhood and was desperate for her to talk to someone. Then they move down into the kitchen, which is over 200 years old. And they talk about a man who was dressed as a cook who was working on the spit. He was a solid figure that they had seen, and they even chatted for a little bit. And Michaela thought it was very interesting. What was the guide doing there at 2 a.m. in the morning chatting to a ghost?
Yeah. What was he doing?
I don't know. It's a little bit of a skepticism here, I feel. I liked this one. They speak to a paranormal investigator who had a few experiences. They explained that the gatehouse of the priory is supposed to be haunted by a grey lady who killed her dog and then herself in the grounds. One night, setting up for an investigation, the investigator realised he had forgotten a vital piece of equipment, and with it being dark and them being slightly spooked, they ran back towards the direction of the priory to retrieve it, only to hear the barking of an invisible dog chasing him. While the rest of the team found this very amusing, they were a little bit upset. There was also another area they talked about, the music room, where paranormal investigators had lights off and trying to pick up on anything that might be present. And it was a full moon, and two of the group saw a shadow on the fireplace from the outside, a man in a tall hat that was moving past the window. They did a recording, and the team member suddenly stopped filming, saying that the group needed to get out of the building and quickly told her team that she'd seen a man with his face close to hers, described him as wearing a brown military uniform, and it wasn't until afterwards that the team discovered that Priory had been home to members of the Canadian Air Force during the Second World War.
Tick.
Yeah, there you go. You mentioned that one.
Mm-hmm.
I do like it when people have the courage to say what they are seeing, even though it goes against the history of the location, and then you find out that it was. There was a caretaker at the priory who claimed to be awoken one night by a terrifying noise. There was a lot of loud banging next door to their room, which continued to up to 15 minutes.
That's a long time for a banging.
That's a big session.
Yeah.
Once they were brave enough, they decided to venture to investigate and discovered that the new bureau that they had bought had moved, and a figure of eight was scratched into the floor where the bureau had been moved about so violently.
Ooh.
That's poltergeist. Oh. I like that. But now, this is... I just realised I also had a whole thing on the ghost club. I don't know what I've done with that, but we're going to talk now about Most Haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what a lot of people don't realise, that when you are filming a season, a series, did you know that the very first episode you see when they launch the series is not the first one they've filmed?
Mm. So I have found out.
Yeah. Yeah, they generally will keep that first episode till later, because when you're doing your first episode, you're very nervous and you want things to go well, and you make mistakes and you're not quite into the rhythm of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mickleham Priory was their very first episode ever, but it appeared, I think it was episode 8, if I remember correctly, season 1. So that's interesting. That was the first time that Derek Acora appeared on the scene.
Oh.
Ooh, we like Derek Acora stories, don't we? I found this awesome article, which I had a little bit of a chuckle about, which was a Mickleham Priory episode review.
Mm-hmm.
So they're reviewing the Most Haunted episode.
Oh, so is this a random reviewer or anyone important?
I, once again, have written it down somewhere. I've just got to find where the thing is. Oh, you know, I can't find it.
That's okay.
I'll find it later on. Yep. But, yeah, they are talking about how they feel the episode went.
Mm-hmm.
So Yvette Fielding, of course, opens up the program and is giving a little bit of history about the house and some of the stories of the ghosts and the haunting. Now, you know why they do this, don't you? It's not for the history. It's to prime you.
Uh-huh.
It gets you the
excited, yes.
Excited and expectations. Yes. Oh, ho, ho, ho. So shortly afterwards, they introduce the eminent medium, Derek Acora.
Mm-hmm.
They then speak to Chris Tuckett, who is the property manager, and they talk about tales of moving furniture, scratches on the floor, which we just talked about, the figure eight and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time I hear the sounds of a crying woman. Hmm. He declares that things have become so bad that he needs to move out. It's just getting too bad.
Mm-hmm.
This is also when they introduce parapsychologist Jason Carl. Do you remember Jason Carl?
No,
only apparently in season 1, if I remember correctly. Then they head off into the Undercroft, where they place the dead monks. And she regales viewers with the tales of the BBC film crew having encountered the supernatural before she takes a walk around with Derek. At one point, she speaks to us from the ladies. Now, I'm trying to work out, does that mean she's in the toilet?
I'd say so.
Where she tells us that she had a strange experience.
I'm feeling ya. I know what that's like.
Yes, there is one bathroom at Maitland Jail that is...
not nice.
Well, depends, I suppose.
Well, it's not nice.
All right, so... apparently they're all having dinner, and do you know what happens?
What?
Derek slips into a mini trance during supper time.
Oh.
I'd be off. I'd be like, Derek, can you let me finish me bangers and mash, please? We've got spotted dick for dessert. Please hold up. So he starts to pick up on a little girl by the name of Rosemary.
Rosemary.
Oh, boy.
Rosemary, yes.
Now, there is no historical records of a rosemary, but that doesn't mean there wasn't a rosemary because
there are lots of children and servants would have had kids.
And they don't really keep track of the lower class, so to speak. Don't.
Women and children didn't mean a thing.
Now, you can see apparently that Yvette's a little bit phased by this. She's not real happy, but she's also a little bit amazed. So during the trance session, he picks up also two ladies that once lived at Mickleham, which then Jason Carl, the parapsychologist, says, tick. We have a story on how some nurses arranged a stay at the Priory in a ghost hunt, but they didn't finish the night because they were so scared. It's winding people up. As they enter the doorway of the Undercroft, a door opens by itself. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what it is, but Derek does. Derek knows exactly who it is. It's the ghost of Herbert. Herbert Pelham. A former resident of the house. Did you have a Herbert Pelham in that long list of names? Because it did not sound familiar.
No.
According to Derek, the spirit beckons them to go through an open door where another spirit named Thomas Sackville, now we had Thomas Sackville, was waiting.
We had him. Now he's so correct with all of these, isn't he?
Oh, it's amazing, isn't he?
He's spot on.
Oh, Sam. Sam's doing a good job. That's his spirit guide. So Sackville was a real person, a poet who once lived at Mickleham, and then they head off into the kitchen where they've got another ghost.
Mm-hmm.
It's Molly. Molly Pearson. Sam, who's that? It's Molly. Molly's in the kitchen. Now, Derek says that Thomas Sackville is a pervert. He's a pervert who got up to things with this young girl. And that is why Rosemary is so terrified of Sackville. Now, this very clever Rosemary ghost takes Derek to a staircase, which is hidden. And there is a statue of a Madonna and child located inside the cupboard like a sort of shrine.
Oh.
Apparently, this is where Rosemary keeps her dolls and where she used to hide from Thomas Sackville.
Was it? Upstairs? Downstairs?
Well, see, the one that I got told...
It was upstairs.
But this is, a hidden staircase. So poor old Yvette. She's a little bit upset by this stage, isn't she?
It's all about Derek at the moment.
Well, it is. That's why she's going to just move things around a little bit. She declares that at the end of the evening they will hold a seance and they're going to try and help the little girl cross over.
Oh, good on you,
Yvette. Bless you, Yvette. Now, as they're moving through... Now, I'm going to come back to all this later on, so just remember these little bits.
Mm-hmm.
As they enter another room, poor Yvette... You know what happened to her?
Oh, she gets taken over.
No.
Does she start to scream?
No. Well, she probably did because she got pinched on the bottom.
Oh!
She got a little bit of hanky-panky. Well,
that must be that Thomas Sackville.
We'll find out, maybe. Now, Derek claims that the room is haunted by a stern woman who tells him that the room burnt down. Hang on. Didn't you tell me that in history?
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be rebuilt?
Yes.
Right, so now we're into the dining room. Jason Carl claims that in 1993, during a similar vigil, a strange footprint was found on the hearth and later captured on film. Now, we've had a footprint.
We have.
At Maitland Jail.
We have.
Now, they hear a strange whining noise, and as they hear the whining noise, the lights go off, and they can't work out where that's coming from. Carl Beattie is on camera. He claims to have felt a little bit of a tingly sensation. Whoo! And that he and Rick saw a set of legs covered by a coat which simply disappeared.
Ooh.
Now, they dig out their EMF meters then and they head out to go and see if they can catch spirit phenomena with an EMF meter.
Mm-hmm.
The meter goes wild. Nobody knows why, but Derek does. Derek, now this is funny because it says Akora Clams, that I think they meant to say Clams, Sackville's wife is making it happen because she wants to know where her husband is.
Mm-hmm.
He's off chasing that child. That's what he's doing. Horrible man. They go back into the kitchen. You'd never guess what's in the kitchen. High EMF, Renata.
Really?
High EMF in the kitchen. I've never heard of it. That poor Jason who was there has no explanation for it.
I don't know, but Derek has.
But Derek does. Derek goes into a trance. And he starts.
He's good at those trances.
Oh, he is. He's pretty amazing. That's and he starts acting like he's a big man. And he. Oh, hello. And keeps bending down. So he must be like ducking through doorways and things. I wanted to watch this and I haven't had time to watch it. But this was just such a glorious recount of it. I felt like I was there with them. So then he comes back to himself and he's back and it's all right. So at 4:30 a.m., Carl joins him and Ian, the cameraman, and they head into Rosemary's hidden stairwell. The EMF meter at this point goes, "Hey, Moya! Oh, bloody ghosts and the EMF!" We know that ghosts, it's picking up on fluctuations. They're walking around with cameras and microphones. No wonder it's going off. Mm. And apparently Ian is mysteriously pushed over, making the camera malfunction and the picture disappears.
No.
You know, the cameraman is blaming the ghosts for something they've done wrong. No, of course it was the ghost. Anyway, they fix it up. They get the picture back and... they find, Rosemary kept her dolls inside a chest that was located inside that room. But they're talking about the Madonna. So I wonder if that's what she thinks is her dolls. But anyway, they wrap up. As Yvette promised, they hold a seance for Rosemary. And they try to make contact with her and help her out. I don't really know what happened because it doesn't tell us.
No.
I know, but I'm sure Derek knows. During the program, viewers are left believing that they were witnessing firsthand several supernatural occurrences, the doors opening, strange lights, the pinch on Yvette's bottom, and Derek Okora going into a trance. Now, this is where they start talking about things that might not be quite right. We go down into this. Well, I've got to find it. Thomas Sackville, 1st Earl of Dorset, an MP for East Grinstead, was a well-known poet who lived at Mickleham Priory. So he's a real person. He was also a cousin of Queen Anne Boleyn. Akora's claiming that he's a pervert and who fondled and did things with young girls. Now, nowhere in the historical records are there any reports of any sort of behaviour of this man. But in saying that, they would cover up things, particularly if he was a cousin of the Queen.
Absolutely.
So I know that this person is saying that there is no records anywhere, therefore it won't be true and it was just put out there for... Yeah, to bring the audience in because everyone loves to have a bad ghost. But this person can no longer speak for themselves. And this is one of the things that really pisses me off about psychics and mediums when they make up stories about people who can no longer speak for themselves. And then people pretend that it's part of their history. Rosemary, the child ghost, no historical reference to Mickleham. But as I said before, that doesn't prove that she wasn't there. Could well have been. There is something else that they mentioned here. Jason Carl is an actor who worked on Most Haunted but left the series after season one. That doesn't mean they're not a parapsychologist or some sort of scientist with an inkling. I'm an actor. Does that mean that because I'm an actor, I have no knowledge of the field at all?
Yeah, but if he's been portrayed, that's a fine line. If he's actually being portrayed as a parapsychologist, you know, the first thing is that he knows his stuff rather than an actor who knows a bit about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, well, when was the last time you picked up a book?
Now, this is
what's
one...
his name? Jason Carl.
Jason Carl. All right, let's quickly Google. All right, we had a quick pause and just looked him up. Now, he has done quite a bit of work. He is... trained
good at what
in,
he does, changed.
Yeah, he's a good presenter and things like that. Now, according to the article I have here, they're saying that he was, I've just lost the spot, about something about being hired. Even though he's neither a scientist nor a historian, he was engaged by Most Haunted to give a resident skeptic view and an occasional historic one. Mm-hmm. So I gather that was his job. Do you need to be a paranormal investigator or anything to have a skeptical view?
No,
you
but
just need to ask questions.
You shouldn't be having the title of parapsychologist.
Well, I don't know if he is a parapsychologist. That's the thing.
But it's written up here in some of the,
oh, he is,
the
is
things.
He?
No, no. It's just it's written here like that. That's what he was presented as in Most Haunted.
Mm.
As a parapsychologist, and you kind of go, well,
that a parapsychologist has a degree in psychology,
yeah,
with a unit in the extra para bit. Anyway, this is the bit I really liked. Let's get on to the next bit. The okay. pinching of a vet's bottom.
Okay, let's go there.
Let's go there. Now, I don't know if a lot of people know, but hopefully you do, that Carl Beatty, the cameraman, is her husband, right?
Uh-huh.
And apparently they used to get up to a lot of mischief on set. And it's quite possible that he pinched her on the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe that's why he was feeling tingly too.
Mm.
Ooh!
And he didn't say anything to her, so he just let it slide.
Well, who knows? We don't know for sure. This mm-hmm. is just this person's possibility of explaining what had happened there, really.
Mm-hmm.
Let me have a quick look at the last page. Yeah, I think that's about all I've got from mine. But I just found that was quite an interesting summary of the episode. I mean, there's been a lot of history. There's a lot of layers. There has been deaths. There's been drownings. There's mm-hmm. been sacking of the place and people doing rotten, bad, horrible things. There's been fires. It's got hundreds and hundreds of years of history.
Yeah, and so many people going through the place.
Yeah.
And
taking their pound of flesh with them as they went.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised that the building is not angry at the world and those who come through there for what's happened to it.
Mm. Well, you did have quite a period... No. I was going to go back to the canons and priors praying, but I don't know whether they were actually doing the right things or not and sort of, you know, layering that, you know.
Oh, there we go. We've got alarms going off.
And that
I think I set that alarm to remind us to do something, but I can't remember what it is. Oh, the joy of my brain.
Just layering, you know how, you know, if there's a place that has a long history of prayer and ritual and everything, then it is a very sacred place.
Well, I don't know how much praying was going on there, Renata.
I don't. After hearing the canons and everyone heading off to the tavern across the road to have a good time and then come back.
And sell off the gold crosses.
Yeah, who knows?
I reckon there could be some ghosts there. I'm going to say that I reckon it's haunted by those who think that it was an absolute dogfight what went down in there.
Yeah, I pretty well think that it's...
We have to go visit.
Yeah, it's haunted for sure. We don't know.
No, I like there's a maid. I like there's a cook. I like there's just ordinary people in there as well.
Absolutely.
That gives me great joy. That brings us to the end of this episode. If you've enjoyed it, please share it around. Let other people know about our craziness. If you want to support our work, you know all the stuff we do, the Grand Poo Bars and the Patreons, and you can buy us a cup of coffee. All the links are down below in the comments and the description of what this episode's all about. Thanks for being here, guys. We'll see you on the dark side.
Stay spooky.
Be frightfully good.
Don't be a dickhead.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.